Some of you might know I started this series on the five hindrances, which are five mind states that can be kind of a hindrance or an obstacle to our practice. And we're at the fifth one tonight. This is the finale. And I will name them just for the overview. So the first one is sensual desire. Second one is ill will. The third one is a combination of sloth and torpor, which is kind of this drowsiness, this fatigue. Then the fourth one is a combination of restlessness and worry. And then the fifth one is doubt. And so the other four are on the website, if you're interested. And today we'll continue with doubt. So the Pali term for doubt is vicikicca. And it's often translated as doubt or indecision. And there's this kind of scholarly, this woman, Nina van Gorkum. I'm trying to pronounce it in an English way, but she's Dutch. Nina van Gorkum in Dutch. she lives in the Netherlands again, but she lived in Canada for a while, I think. And she wrote several books about the Abhidhamma. So that's the Buddhist psychology. And she mentions, the reality of vicikicca is not the same as what we mean by doubt in conventional language. Vicikicca is not doubt about someone's name or about the weather. Vicikicca is doubt about realities, about nama-rupa. Nama-rupa is mind and matter. About cause and the result. About the Four Noble Truths. About dependent origination. And so she calls out a whole bunch of teachings. So basically doubt about the Dhamma, doubt about the teachings of the Buddha. And it can also express itself as doubt about practice. So, for example, our own ability to practice or our ability to reach a certain goal that we might have for our practice. For example, for some of us that might be awakening. Or it might be living a more wholesome life. It could be also a goal, the practice. There can also be doubt around the teacher. Is the teacher competent? Do they know what they're talking about? Etc. And so these doubts can actually sometimes be useful and wholesome. And the teacher Gil Fronsdal, he makes the distinction between hindering doubts and questioning doubts. So hindering doubts are those that are not so helpful, that hinder our practice. And then questioning doubts can be helpful and wholesome. And like, for example, it might be that the teacher has done misconduct. Then it's good to doubt this teacher. It's wholesome to not engage with this teacher anymore. Or if we have questions about the practice, if we're not sure about what we're actually doing or how it's working, this practice, or that kind of thing, then it can be really good to have doubt and to actually talk to someone who might know to clarify. So the Buddha offers this simile for each hindrance. And then for doubt, he offers the following simile, which can be, sometimes these similes are really powerful to feel into what this hindrance is about. And so for doubt, he says, suppose there is a bowl of water that is turbid, unsettled, muddy, placed in the dark. If a person with good sight were to examine their own facial reflection in it, they would neither know nor see it as it really is. So too, when one dwells with a mind obsessed by doubt. And so this really points to the not clear seeing. Each of these similes for each hindrance is a bowl of water with some sort of thing in it, right? So that you can't see your reflection. And especially for doubt, I think it's true that there's this unclearness going on in the mind. And we can really be caught in doubt if it's the hindering version of doubt. In the simile, this bowl of water is not only muddy and murky, it is also placed in the dark. So it feels a little bit like a double whammy. It's like, if it was in the light, we could still not see it. Or if it was clear water in the dark, we can still not see our reflection. So, and this hindering doubt is said to be one of the more dangerous ones, one of the more dangerous hindrances. The other hindrances we can experience, and okay, that's not pleasant and not great to experience those hindrances, but in itself they won't really the difference with doubt is that it can, you know, take us off the path. So it can make that we stop practicing because we're doubting so much. And the other hindrances don't really have that potential so directly. And so it's really important to recognize this, to recognize when it arises. And then Gil Fronsdal says, then we can doubt the doubt. So we can try to see if we can be a little bit skeptical towards the doubt itself. And we don't always have to believe all the thoughts that the doubt projects. And so this is the first step, recognizing. I've been using these five steps for each of the hindrances that the Buddha talks about, these five different steps we can take with each hindrance. And the first step is always the recognizing, the noticing that it's there, that the hindrance is there. And in itself, that can already be freeing, because sometimes if we do our practice and these doubting thoughts arise, and all of a sudden we see it, oh wait, this is just doubt, and then it can just kind of loosen or even dissipate right in that moment. So that can happen. That's really wonderful if it happens. And if it doesn't happen, we can start investigating it a little more, like, and what does it feel like in the body or the mind? Maybe there's a tension in the belly, or tightness in the chest, or, you know, whatever it is for us can be different for everyone. Sometimes there might be a component of fear or judgment or restlessness. Can all have kind of doubt, can have all these flavors. And just to name a few of what can happen. And when doubt is about our own practice, then we can also notice the strong sense of self that arises with that. This I, this me, this mind, I can't do this, or I'm such a failure. And we'll be noticing this I, like as if there's someone here that can actually do something. Well, it's just happening. Practice is just happening. So this is an important step, this first step of recognizing, noticing. And then the second step the Buddha names is to notice when it's not present, the absence of doubt. And we might be able to recognize the opposite of doubt, which is faith. And faith is kind of a word that might not resonate for everyone because it might be a little bit too religious. But we can also translate this Pali word that often translated as faith, sadda. We can translate that with confidence or trust as well. And so when doubt is absent, often there's some level, even if it's tiny, some level of trust, some level of confidence or faith, if that word works for you. And so sometimes we might be able to tune in, like, oh, is there some level of confidence or trust present? And then we can delight in that. And sometimes it can be kind of neutral, kind of not really doubting, but not really trusting either, just kind of okay. So, when doubt is absent, we can delight in that. And the Buddha has a simile for that as well, for when doubt is absent. He says, suppose there was a person with wealth and property who was traveling along a desert road. But after some time, they crossed over the desert, safe and sound, with no loss of wealth. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. So this here, it's like doubt is like being in the desert. And being devoid of this most, you know, one of the most important nutrients that we have, which is water. And one of the most important nutrients that we have in our practice is this confidence or trust or this faith. And so he says, then when we finally cross that desert, then we're delighted, happy, joyful. And we can take a sip of this oasis of some confidence and some trust again. So that's the second step, noticing the absence. And then the third step is to look at how did it arise, this hindrance? What causes and conditions led to the arising? And so we can investigate this. Maybe it was buying into certain thought patterns that led to the arising of doubt. Maybe it was something that someone did or someone said to you. And maybe it was something else. Maybe it was some sort of pattern that you have, that you just kind of doubt whatever's happening. It's kind of this more general pattern. It can be all sorts of things. And so it's good to look at that, and then maybe we can intercept it before it starts to grow too strongly, if we know what kind of pattern leads to this doubt. And then the fourth step is, how is this doubt removed? It says in the suttas, I say this every time, but I don't like the word remove. because it's not something we remove, it's something that we work with. So there are several ways to go about this working with. And first of all, these earlier steps that I just talked about are important. Recognizing it, noticing it, knowing when it's not there, knowing how it arose, why it arose, what causes and conditions led to it. And next to that, there are some other things we can do with doubt. And so it depends a little bit on the context of the doubt. So if the doubt is something around the teachings, then we can study the Dharma, or we talk to a Dharma friend or to a teacher about the teachings. Sometimes contemplation or reflection might help around your question. And one of the things that Gil Fronsdal points out is having a clear understanding of the Buddha's teachings on what is skillful and what is unskillful can go a long way towards overcoming doubt. So the teachings on what is skillful and what is unskillful. And that's basically the theme of the Noble Eightfold Path, if you want to dive deeper into that. Studying the Noble Eightfold Path is really about living a skillful life. And then, so other times, doubt might be a bit more about the practice or our ability to practice. And so then we can reflect on beliefs that we might hold about ourselves, questioning those beliefs. Because beliefs are basically just thought structures. So you can just look at those thought structures and see that it's just thoughts arising. It's not kind of like our whole self, basically. It's just thinking. And sometimes it can help to reflect on what we, you know, what we are able to do, what we are capable of. The confidence we have in certain aspects of our practice, maybe. Or maybe another time that we felt confident in our practice. We'll remind ourselves about that it's not this always present doubt, that there are periods in our practice that we don't doubt our own ability, then it's that comes natural. Because sometimes when we are experiencing doubt, it can seem like it's always been like that, but for most of us it's not. It's just coming and going. But if we're in the middle of it, it can feel so heavy and like a truth. Well, maybe a few minutes later or a few hours or a few days, it might be just gone. It's just an impermanent phenomena as well, just like everything else. And then the fifth step is to look at how we can maybe prevent it from arising. And then I think one of the most helpful things for that is to practice all the other steps and also to look at what leads to the arising. Because when we know that, then we might know how we can prevent it, these situations from happening, or how we can work through whatever it is that makes it arise. Like if it's about thoughts and beliefs about our own inadequacies, then we know we can work on those thoughts and beliefs. And then at some point, the doubt might not arise anymore because we've worked through that and it's not a part of our belief system anymore. And sometimes doubt can be prevented just simply by staying engaged with the Dharma. Just keep doing the practice, keep studying the Dharma. Because if we have these periods where the Dharma kind of sinks to the background and we don't do much with it, and then we have to rekindle this whole thing. Well, if we just stay engaged, it might prevent the doubt from arising in the first place. Sometimes that might work. So the steps are, the first one is to notice the hindrance and feel it, the body-mind aspects. Noticing the absence, delighting in the absence. Maybe tuning into the confidence, the trust, the faith. The third step, to look at the causes and conditions for it to arise. Fourth step is the quote-unquote removal, which we can do by recognizing it and studying and reflecting and looking at our beliefs. And then the fifth step was to prevent it from arising, which is about the knowing of the causes and conditions. And so this is the conclusion of those five hindrances. And the important with all these five is that they all can be fertile ground for our practice. And I think I've mentioned this in one of the other talks. It's like the hindrances are like the simile of the lotus growing out of the mud. So the hindrances are the mud giving rise to the lotus. So they can be this inspiration for our practice, or this fertile ground for practice, because it can help us grow insight and wisdom. It can really be helpful to work with the hindrances and to build that resilience that we were talking about earlier. Build that resilience to be with whatever it is that arises. And so these five hindrances can really be the fuel for the progression on the path. Progression towards this wholesomeness and skillfulness that Gil was talking about. And so I want to end with this whole series with a quote from the Buddha. And this is from one of those suttas with the bowls. And here he describes the bowl of water without the hindrances. He says, "Suppose there's a bowl of water that is clear, serene, limpid, set out in the light. If a person with good sight were to examine their own facial reflection in it, they would know and see it as it really is. So too, when one dwells with a mind that is not obsessed by the hindrances.